Okay, first of all, Lindsay told me I made a mistake and I forgot to fix it. This should say 2 to 6. So she's available today from 2 to 6. And I just hit the 3 instead of the 2. Okay, what I want to do first is discuss a few things that are in Chapter 1 in your book, if you've read Chapter 1 or you're in these exercises. The first one I want to look at is programming process. So if you bring that up, and for some reason it's not coming in at the top, so you can scroll up and go to the top. So this is basically the 5 steps that you need to go through in programming, okay? And the first one, as they said down below, is clarifying or defining the problem, okay? So somebody comes and says, we need a program that is going to give us this output, and we need these results, and we need these calculations, and whatever. The important thing is to make sure that the directions that you're getting are absolutely correct. And usually that involves going around and talking to people that are going to use the output, or talking to people that are involved with the output, and clarifying and making sure that your program is going to meet the definition of what they want. Usually when I do a program, I write out my understanding of what they want and I get them to sign off on it. As in, I want a signature telling me that they agree that this is what I am going to create. Because I don't want to create the program and then have them come back and say, but I want it. Okay? I had that happen too many times when I started out. So now I write out my specifications. This is my understanding of what you want. And I get a sign-off on it, telling me that yes, indeed, that is what they want. Once you understand the problem, the next thing is to design the program. And that involves basically laying out a flowchart, pseudocode, designing what you want for the program, figuring out the logic, figuring out what you have to do to produce the results that have been asked for. And so you have to design the program. Now, when you design it, you have basically 3 things that you can be involved in, and actually they kind of throw in case, but case is more selection. I have to be able to do sequence, which means my program is going to go in sequence. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's going to go through the instructions in sequence. I need to be able to have selection, and that involves having if statements. And I need to be able to loop. That means I need to be able to do things over and over and over again. So every program has to be able to have sequence, selection, and looping. And a case structure is really another kind of selection. Then I code the program. Okay, so I write the program and I code it. Once I code it, I have to get it into I have to code it in a high-level language. And the computer then turns it into something it can do. Okay, the computer is based on binary. I'm based on, I don't want to write in machine language. So I'm going to write in a high-level language, and we're going to look at that in a minute. And it will turn it into something that it can execute. And in the process, it will tell me if it found errors that it can't translate. And if it finds errors that it can't translate, it will give me error listings, hopefully. And then I have to go in and fix those errors. And we're going to talk about the structure to do that in a minute. So after I write the program, I have to get the program clean so that it can be run. So that means I have to get rid of any errors that are in it that would not make it run. Once the program is runnable, then I need to test it. And I test it with data and make sure that it is working correctly. And I shouldn't just test it with my data. I should also have my supervisor or the people that are going to use it or somebody require, give me test data. Because sometimes if I test it with just my data, I overlook something I should have done. But if somebody gives me some real live data, then if I test it with that data, it's more likely to point out things of, oops, I should have done that. If the program is going to read output from another program, I then have to test it with that other program to make sure that the other program, the output the other program produces, I can handle. Okay, so I have to, just put it right there. I have to be able to handle that. So I have to test the program all over the place. Okay. And then I put the program, after I've tested it and tested it and tested it, I put it into production. Okay? So that means it becomes part of the routine. It gets run whenever people need the output that I'm making. It gets run. Now, as soon as it gets run, people are going to say, oh, I wish we had done this, or I wish we had that, or I wish. And what most people do is, if the wish is fairly easy to grant, they go ahead and do it. For example, I remember creating a report one time, and there were two fields that weren't next to each other, and somebody came and said, you know, if those two fields were next to each other, this report would have a lot more validity, whether it's an on-screen report or a paper report. This would be a lot easier to work with. Well, that was easy. So we flipped the two fields and put them next to each other, and that was easy. But if they come in with big maintenance problems, then you have to get approval from above, because that's a budget problem. You're going to be spending more time on the program. So usually maintenance is done at the beginning, and then after you've got it so that everybody's semi-happy with it, maintenance becomes something that gets done on a monthly basis, on every 3 months, every 6 months, unless of course the program crashes and the output is necessary. But other than that, you don't keep fixing things when somebody says, ooh, could you change this? You say, you know, submit a request and we will be maintaining this program in March. And so we'll take a look at your request in March. Okay? So those are kind of the steps that you go through in doing the program. And the book has a nice layout of it. And this has a good layout of it too. So you can get the information from here. Now, if I write a program, so I'm going to start out and I'm going to have my program that I'm going to write. And that program is in upper level language. Might be Visual Basic, might be C++, might be Java. It's going to be in some language. Okay, so I feed it into either a compiler or an interpreter. And I'm going to talk mostly about a compiler. The difference between them is a compiler takes the whole program and turns it into a machine language version that can be executed. An interpreter does it a few commands at a time. Okay, so JavaScript, for example, when we start writing with JavaScript, it's going to find some errors and give them back to you, and then may find another error and that sort of thing. So JavaScript is more using an interpreter. C++ is more using a compiler. So I'm going to load my compiler, which is on a disk someplace, into memory. And I'm going to have the compiler in there. And I'm going to load my program in, and it is going to translate it. Okay? And it translates it into an executable version. If it can. If it can, it translates it into an executable version. If it can't, it gives you errors. So I get a bunch of compile errors. Okay? Now, compile errors are syntax errors. They are misuse of the language. Okay? So if I had a language that has write in it, W-R-I-T-E, and for some reason I type R-I-G-H-T, it's not going to be able to execute because it has no idea what R-I-G-H-T means. Knows what W-R-I-T-E means, but it doesn't know the other. And so that's going to come up as a syntax error, a misuse of the language. Other misuses of the languages are forgetting to put in commas where the comma was needed, or forgetting a semicolon where the semicolon was needed, but just somehow not writing the program language-wise correctly. And the compiler catches those things and says, I don't know what you want there. I can't translate it correctly. So if I get syntax errors, I go back to the original program and I fix them. And then I try compiling again. And if it finds more errors, it gives me the errors and I go back and fix them and try compiling again. And we go through this until I get it right. Okay? So once I've got the executable version, can be loaded into memory. Okay? So here is the executable. And I may have data coming in, and that data may be being keyed in by a user. It may be being read off a database, but there is data coming in to the executable version usually. Usually you're processing data in some way. Okay, so data is coming in, and the program will produce any output that you require. So this data is input, and it produces output that you need. Okay. The output may or may not be correct. This is why you need to test with data, because the output may not be correct. So let's say that you were doing a payroll program, and instead of multiplying hours times pay per hour, you added them. Okay, so you added hours, just made a mistake and added hours. The compiler had no problem with that because the compiler doesn't know what you're doing. So you did a legitimate add instead of a legitimate multiply. It doesn't have any problem with that. It produced the executable. The executable went ahead and executed it. But when you see it, you had 40 hours and you worked for $50 an hour, that should be $2,000, and it added the 40 and 50 and gave you $90. Okay, not an acceptable problem. Okay, so what you have to do is check the output, and here you're looking for logic errors. Okay, you're looking for things that you told the computer to do and you were wrong. Okay, you told it to add instead of multiply. So you've got logic errors going on. Okay, so if you find a logic error, then again, you've got to go all the way back to the program because that's where you told it to add instead of multiply. So you're going all the way back to the program. You have to make that change and hope that you don't mess up something while you're doing it, so that it will compile, then you can get the executable version, and then you can test it again and see if now it's working correctly. The output check usually is done by multiple people. Multiple people are gonna look at the output and see if you're getting the right output before they put this into production. When finally you think the executable is working fine, then you put it into production. And that means that it's used on a daily or weekly or whatever it is basis. And hopefully it works. And then you take requests for changes as maintenance requests and maintaining the program. Questions? As I said, there are articles that I've put up under week four that you can read, and the book, if you bought the book, has a good explanation of that. And if you go to Amazon and look at what they have to offer in the first chapter of the book, you get a good explanation there. Okay, then what I want to do next is go in, and at the bottom of week four, there is a presentation on structure with loops, and I want to take a look at that. So this again brings up the three things that a programmer has to be able to do. The programming logic has to have sequence, selection, and looping. Okay, so those three things are required before you can call yourself a programming language. HTML can't do those things. HTML can only do sequence. It drops down and does the next line, the next line, the next line. It can't ask questions and say, if this is true, do one thing, otherwise do something else. And it can't set up a do this 10 times. Okay, HTML doesn't have the power to do that. But what happens is that we can insert other languages into HTML, and those other languages then give me this power. So I can insert JavaScript into HTML, and it has the ability to have ask questions and loop. I can also insert something like PHP into HTML, and it has the same abilities. In fact, has more abilities because it can handle databases as well. Okay. So a program has to have those three things to be called a programming language. And HTML is called a hypertext markup language as opposed to a programming language because it doesn't have those abilities.
So what is HTML called?
Hypertext markup language.
Well,
it's called a markup language.
Oh.
Okay. Hypertext markup language. Okay, there are two kinds of loops that I can have. And I use an example of a do while that they can be written other ways. But one of the kinds of loops I can have is I ask a condition. And if it's true, I process. And if it's not, I am going to drop out. I can also, that's when I'm doing a loop. We looked at on Tuesday all the different ways you can just ask a question and do different kinds of processing. But here I want to process over and over and over again. So I want to ask a question and have that question determine whether I'm still going to loop through and do the processing again. Then I ask and I loop through and do the processing. So I might be asking, is there still another record to be processed? If the answer is yes, then process it and then read another record, and we'll see that in a minute. I could be asking any number of different conditions that will get me out. I can ask the user, are you done? And if the user is done, I will drop out. If the user wants to keep processing, I will process again. But in this one, I ask the question, and then determine the processing. In the next one, I do processing, and then I ask the question. So this means I will always do it once. Okay? So back on the one before this, I may never process. If I get a no to the question, I may not process. So let's say I have an empty table, and I say, the condition is there any record left? Well, it's empty. So the answer is no, there aren't any records left. So if there aren't any records left, it gets out and it never processes. On the second one, I am processing before I ask the question. So that means I will always do it once. At least once. Can't spell. So I will always process at least once, because I do the processing before I ask the question. So I will always do the processing at least once. Okay? So there are times when I want that to happen. I want to do the processing at least once. There are other times when I don't. I want to ask the question first. And I choose the two styles depending on what it is I need to accomplish. Okay, so here is an example. In this one, I'm saying, okay, I am going to read a table or a file. Okay, a table is a file that's inside a database, and you created tables when you were doing access. You can also have a file that's just a standalone file. Okay, it's just a record that I wrote out to a disk. And in that case, it's usually called a file. But if it's part of a database, it's usually called a table. So I said, okay, I'm going to start my program. And the first thing I'm doing is what is called an initializing read. And I think your book also calls it a priming read. Okay, there will be a slight pause, because one of my recorders has decided to die. So I want to replace it before the other one decides to die. Okay, come on. Thank you. Please wait, please wait, please wait, flashing at me. There. Yay. Okay. So I do the initializing read. That is, I read the first record. So let's say I have a disk file or database file. I will read the very first record. If the read is successful, EOF stands for end of file. As long as it's not end of file, so that means the read was successful. If I attempted to read and it told me that it was end of file, then I'm out of here. I stop. But as long as the read was successful, I do whatever processing I want to do, and then I read the next record. So I process and then I read the next record and I loop back and check, was that read successful? If that read was successful, then it's not in the file, I process, and I read a third record. And I go back, and as long as that read was successful, I process and read again. And I just go through that for however many records there are on the file. So if there are 10,000 records, I go through that 10,000 times. And finally, when I try to read and there isn't anything left, I drop out. The processing can be very simple. The processing can be very complex, where I ask a whole lot of questions and do a whole lot of different things. But I'm just showing you that it does whatever processing needs to be done. And then you read another record. Questions? Come on, you can do it. Okay. Okay, so instead of using read to control it, I might have a counter that I want to control something. So I want to do it 5 times, or I want to do it whatever number of times. So I can say, okay, I'm going to have a counter, and it's going to have a start point of 1. So I'm going to have a start point of 1, and I'm going to have a stop point of, let's say, 5. Okay? So I start out, and I set my counter equal to 1. So therefore, the start point is now in the counter. And then I drop down, and I say, is the counter less than the stop point? Yes, it is. So I do the processing, whatever processing it takes. And so I process. Okay, I process 1 or whatever. Then I come down and I say, okay, now I'm going to increment the counter. So the counter is now a 2. And I go back. Is the counter less than the stop point? Yes, it is. So I process 2. And then I increment the counter. And I go back. Is the counter less than the stop point? Yes, it is. So I process 3. And I add 1 to the counter. I go back, is the counter less than the stop point? Yes, it is, so I process 4. And then I increment the counter, which is 5. I go back, is counter less than the stop point? No, so I drop out and I'm done. Okay, because it's no longer, I've hit the stop point. Now, sometimes you start the processing at 0, and then I would have got 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. But at any rate, when I hit, the counter is no longer less than the stop point. I'm getting out of here. Okay. Now, the looping structure, which we're doing here, has 3 things that you do. You initialize the counter outside the loop to a specific stop point. So that's the first thing that you do. You then test the counter, and that's the second thing to do. And then you change the counter, and that's the third thing that you do. Okay, so to have a loop work successfully, you have to set it up before you start. You have to check it every time you go through. And you have to change the control. Those are the controls. Counter is the control. Counter is controlling it. So I'm changing the control. Okay. So counter is my control. so I am changing it. Okay, if I don't change it, then it will go on forever. And I did that once when I was first learning to program. I forgot to change the counter. And the person who was in, back then we had big computers and big printers, and they came out with a pile of paper about this thick with the same thing written on every single page. And they said, did you really want 1,000 copies of this? No, I really didn't. But what had happened is I forgot to increment the counter. And so it kept printing over and over and over and over again. And anyway, I was embarrassed and I learned my lesson. Okay, so on the whole, I don't make that mistake anymore. Questions? So you have to get the counter ready to go. You have to check it every time, because if I don't check it and just say process increment without checking, then it will also be a problem. And I have to change the control. Okay, so the first example we were looking at, I was reading records, and when I hit end of file, that was when I stopped. So the reading the records and end of file was my control, okay? In this one, my control is a counter, okay? The other kind of control you can have is you can ask the user, do you want to do it again, yes or no? And if the user says yes, you process, and if they say no, you quit. So you can have that kind of control as well. So there's a lot of different controls, but you need something as a control to tell when to stop doing the loop, or you'll do it forever. Okay. Now on this one, if I had set the counter at 10, let's say, at the beginning, if I had set the start point at 10, would I have executed it all?
No.
No, I wouldn't execute it all, because it would have dropped down here. If I set my counter at 10, it would have come down as 10 less than 5, because my start point is 5. No, 10 is not less than 5. So at that point, it would never have processed. It would have just dropped out. Okay? So there's the possibility of never doing any processing on this one. On the next one, I have the counter being set. So again, I am setting the counter to 1. So I'm going to have my start point 1, and my stop point, I'll make 5 again. So I set the counter equal to the stop point, and then I process. So on this one, I will always process once, because I process before I check. Okay? So I do the processing, and the processing is process 1. Okay, and then I increment the counter, so it's now 2, and then I check. Is counter not equal to the stop point? No, it's not equal to the stop point. So I go back, and I process 2, and I increment the counter to 3, and I check. Is counter not equal to the stop point? It's not equal. So I go back, and I process 3, and I increment the counter, and I say, is the counter not equal to the stop point? No. So I go back, I process 4, increment the counter, and then I said, is counter not equal? It is equal, so I drop out. The counter is equal to the stop point, and so I drop out. So on this one, I did one processing, even if I had put the stop point in as 10, if the stop point had been 10, I would have still processed, incremented up to 11. 11's not equal to 5, and I'm not a PI. Okay. So, I think that does it. So what I'm going to have you do today is actually start what will be finished as homework if you don't get it done, and that is a logic assignment that I've got, the logic PowerPoint assignment. Okay. Now, on this assignment, you're going to be playing computer. Now, what I define as playing computer is you're going to step through the things like the computer room and give me the answers that the computer would give me. So we'll start out, and this one is the file that I'm going to be using. Okay, so it's an inventory file of a nursery. So I have an item number, an item name, on hand, on order, reorder point, cost, price, and vendor number. And I have that for every single record. So this could have been set up in Access. I could have laid these out in Access. It could have been set up using another database, or just a program that wrote the file. But I've got this collection of data, and I didn't put EOF on here, but when you write a file, at the bottom, there is a tag that tells you that you have read the whole file, and that's the EOF indicator, end of file indicator. So that has an end of file to it. Okay, so I'm coming back and I'm looking at slide 3. So this is doing an initializing read. So the initializing read of the record means that it will be reading that record, because it's reading the first record. That's an initializing read. It was successful, it's not in the file, so I calculate the profit. Okay, so I set up here in the problem that the profit is the difference between price and cost. Okay, so on this one, the profit is going to be $20.89. So I set up things, write out the line, 20.89 is the profit. And then after I do that, I go back and I read another record. So I read another record. It's not in the file. I calculate the profit. I set up the line. I write it. And then I read the third record. And I keep going through these records one at a time. The output report that I want on screen or paper is I want to display the item number, the item name, the price, profit, price, cost, and profit. So I wanted to display 5 things. So for every line, I will write the item number, the item name, the cost, the price, and the profit. And I'll write those all out. Okay? So that's the first thing. The next one is a giveaway. But I still want you to explain it so that that means you understood it. This one is exactly the same, except I'm saying go do the module call process. And when you finish it, come back and continue on your way. So it goes out. It executes all this stuff, and then it comes back and continues on for the check, not in the file. Notice that the last thing I did was read a record. So it's got a new record every time to check. Or if the read was unsuccessful, it knows it has hit in the file. Okay? So I've basically given you the answer, now you've got to parrot it back. Okay. Number three. Or number four, rather. Five, whatever. Okay, so now I'm getting into asking some questions. So when I go over the process, the first thing I'm asking is, okay, you've read a record because I did the initializing read. So I've read this record. That's the record that's sitting in memory that I'm processing currently. I then ask, is the on hand greater than 25? So when I look at Oak, on hand is not greater than 25. So since it's a no, I take that, drop out, and just read another record. So I will not display it at all. I drop out and read another record. The next record that I read is Red Maple. It has an on hand of 26. So that is greater than 25. So I set up the line and I write it. Set it up, I wanted the item number, the item name, the on hand, and the on order. So I would write out 1212, Red Maple, on hand is 26, and on order is 22. So those are the four things that I want to write. After I write those, I read the next record. And when I read the next record, I make the determination as to whether or not it should be displayed, okay? And then I would write out the next record. So I only want to see the records that the flowchart tells you that you should write. Okay. Then after you do this one, they get progressively harder as we go along. And so we keep asking, some of them are pseudocodes, some of them are flowcharts. And for each one, I want to know which records met the criteria and which ones didn't. Okay? So we have about a half an hour, which ought to give you time to at least get started and ask questions if you're not comfortable with it. So get started on this assignment. It's a homework assignment and has to be completed as homework. Does anybody have any questions? Yeah. I don't really care. You can do it in Word. Probably that's the easiest way to do it is Word. Some people have done it in Excel. For all I care, you can do it in Notepad and do it text boxes. So, as long as I can understand it. What do you mean print? Yes, the printer is back there. So you have to use your username and password and everything. Okay, questions? A comma or a space or something, okay. But I just assume they not be one great big blip.
Right.